and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian, or more accurately, the second in our series of special episodes coming from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. We're standing outside the city's gigantic convention centre, where more than 2,500 companies are basically trying to stun us into a vegetative state by showing off the latest gadgets, gizmos and technologies. With more than 40 acres of stands and exhibitions to troll around, there's plenty to see. But we've broken out into the late evening sunshine here to discuss what's hot and what's really, really not. Today we're going to be talking about the latest news from a whole bunch of companies, and you'll hear from Cambridge-based technology firm Plastic Logic, which has just unveiled its rather nifty Q electronic reader.
It's because of the innovation that started at Cambridge University over 10 years ago that we can build something this large, this elegant, that weighs only about a pound. And because it's based on plastic, it's shatterproof, not nearly as fragile as any of the glass-based readers.
Plus, we've been going around the floors to find out what's getting people excited at this year's show. So sit back and crank everything up to 11. This is Tech Weekly at the 2010 Consumer Electronics Show. So it's exciting to be out here in the fresh air rather than inside the sort of, I don't know, fetid air of the convention centre and all the hotels and casinos around here. But fortunately, I'm not alone in experiencing this wonderful joy of the outside world. I'm joined by a friend of the pod and general gadabout Will Head. Hello.
Hello.
And as well as a new voice who we've corralled from among the British troops who get sent to invade CES every year, PC Advisors Matt Egan.
Hello there.
So, hello. How are you both holding up?
It's nice to be outside, I have to say.
Yes.
I've been felt quite cooped up.
It's nice to be outside, but by all accounts, it's quite nice not to be in the UK at the minute as well, which is...
If we'll ever actually get back to the UK, we don't know yet.
Yeah, all of those snowy, snowbound flights. In fact, a lot of people have not turned up this year because, you know, they were supposed to fly out the day the snow arrived. So what I thought we'd do, we'd start the show by maybe just talking about some of the stuff we've seen. The doors officially opened for the first time on Thursday morning, so we're actually starting to get our hands on stuff that's been trailed and announced. I just wondered if maybe we could pick out a few things that we were looking at. Will, I know you were really interested in this Lenovo.
Yeah.
What were they calling it? An Idea Pad.
It's the IdeaPad U1, and it's like a normal laptop, except you can just take the screen off it, and then it becomes a slate tablet thing. And it runs, I think it runs on Lenovo's own OS. So
right.
While it's docked, it's a Windows 7 PC. And then as you pull it out, it shuts all that down and turns into this sort of e-reader, media player, various things that you can do with it. And they've got the special interface on it, which is very finger-friendly.
And did you play with one?
We weren't really allowed to touch it. It had to be in the hands of the demonstrator. And because the interesting thing, we were wondering how heavy the screen actually was. Because if you've got all of the electronics in that, it might be prone to tipping up backwards, or whether they've put some lead in the keyboard as well just to keep it upright when it's in laptop mode.
But yeah.
And they said they reckoned it'd be out for under $1,000 when it comes out later in the year. So obviously not super cheap, but not
that's
that
pretty
expensive.
Affordable. I mean, there's a lot of similarly exciting, innovative designs of laptops around at the minute that will be considerably more than that.
So I was going to say, you sound like you've got a few that you might throw into the mix there.
Well, it was interesting to listen to Will there, because what intrigues me at the minute is, and particularly coming from the rather underwhelming Microsoft keynote, where they sort of mentioned this idea of the slate PC without particularly going any further into it. It does seem to me that a lot of the innovation seems to be coming from the hardware manufacturers, whereas in the past it was kind of expected to come from Microsoft and the software manufacturers. I myself spent a bit of time with Asus today looking at lots of different exciting styles of laptops for audiophiles, laptops for fashionistas, taking the very basic idea of the portable computer and coming up with all these different exciting form factors, chief among which it does seem to be this idea of the slate PC, which is kind of ebook reader, tablet, as well as work machine. And I think it's interesting that the manufacturers are doing this. I think it's probably led by consumer demand as well. Coming out of a recession, there needs to be a good reason to shell out to buy a laptop, and people are looking for different form factors to do different things with their laptops.
But, so one of the things I'm wondering about is, you know, we see a lot of gimmicks at CES every year, and we also see a lot of companies stretching out probably into areas that we wouldn't think about very much because they want to get a little bit of the glory.
Yeah.
I mean, Samsung's a good example. In fact, we're not far from the Samsung stand now, and they've kind of, you know, I associate them really with TVs and that kind of stuff. They've kind of got everything this year.
They've got e-book readers this year, but they haven't just got one. They've got at least four different designs on there. Yeah. They've got like a small one, they've got an A4 one, they've got a touchable one, they've got one with a keyboard.
But I mean, do these feel like genuine, you know, these are genuine products that are going to be out there for everybody, or are they just pinging a load of stuff out that won't be widely available because they can get some headlines at CES?
Yeah, certainly manufacturers do that, and they do that to change the perception of them as a brand. I think in Samsung's case, Samsung is such a huge company. I mean, it essentially owns South Korea, as far as I can see, and it makes displays for pretty much every manufacturer out there. I think if Samsung wants to get into an area, it can. And Samsung laptops, for instance, are pretty popular now, relatively high-end, not the cheapest, but, you know, they're built to last. And I think they're probably quite serious about the ebook reader thing because I think they see a market that is opening up.
Mm. Well, I think we'll talk a bit more about ebooks later. Is there anything that you've seen that I mean, you mentioned that Microsoft essentially was a pretty disappointing keynote in the end. But over and above that, is there anything that has left you wanting a bit more? How did you feel about, say, Intel? You know, they came out, they talked about Atom and all their new processors and how it's going to change the world. Did you buy that?
I do sometimes wonder if taking Microsoft and Intel as very good examples, they're companies who kind of have to do the keynote because otherwise CES isn't CES, and if they don't do it, it's a story in itself. Microsoft done a lot of innovative things over the past 12 months, Windows 7, Office 2010, Security Essentials. It's had a lot to say. I thought it was quite telling that Microsoft said we'll have more to say about mobile technology at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, which is in a month or so. It's kind of like, well, we haven't got much to say right now. I think probably Intel is in the same way. The Atom's taken over the world. Core i7, Core i5, Core i3, these things are changing the way that people manufacture laptops and use laptops. Perhaps they just didn't have that much to say right now.
Yeah. Will, is there anything that you were kind of excited about and then discovered was a bit of a flop or something?
Well,
you know,
actually,
what was the weird
one
stuff?
That was really exciting was Motorola, because Motorola has the ability to sometimes make incredible phones and other times just to make complete dross. But they're still hanging in there. And even with Google, with its Nexus One Android announcement, they came out yesterday with the backflip.
Mm.
And they've looked at the design of a phone and said, well, what can we do to make it different? And they put the keyboard on upside down, essentially. So you have the screen on the top, and underneath you've got the keyboard, which then flips out down and round. So you can then type on it. But you can also then flip it up so it can be, if you want to watch media on it.
Yeah.
But the other good thing they've got is they've, on the back of the screen, they've put a touchpad. So you can scroll round on screen without having to get your finger in the way or make smudge marks. So you can still navigate the interface quite well.
It's one of those things. I saw a demo of that, quite a very early prototype of that kind of technology. It's the kind of thing that sounds really confusing and looks quite confusing, but when you use it, it's actually
I mean, seeing the
really
guy
intuitive.
Run around it made sense. It's sort of, but it's obviously, it takes a mind shift to think, well, you've got your finger behind the screen, can you really use it that way?
So I suppose it's like that terrible word that all companies choose to use these days, which is solutions. But it actually is a solution to a problem that probably people didn't necessarily know they had.
Yeah. So the one other thing I wanted to ask you about, Will, was you got quite up close with Lady Gaga.
I did, yes.
Because she is now the creative director of Polaroid,
yes,
isn't she?
That was a very interesting press conference. I mean, I think hats off to Polaroid because they had probably the biggest crowd sat there waiting for Lady Gaga to turn up and explain how she was. And apparently she really is the creative director. It's not just a title.
It's not just a stunt.
Well, apparently they do expect her to, well, so they say, expect her to come in and actually work. She's got a business card and everything. She's actually on staff. But they won't be making, like, Gaga-branded phone, not phones, obviously, Gaga-branded Polaroid cameras. I think she's meant to be more involved in sort of the product development process or something like that. But it's not going to be a big sort of brandy thing. Other than her being appointed as their creative
this
director.
This could end up really weirdly, couldn't it? I mean, you know, she's got a sense of style that's all of her own, so maybe this is Polaroid's last gasp.
I mean, she did have a huge hat made of hair that she was wearing on stage, which completely blocked out her face. So it could have
been anyone. Yeah, anyway, well, I think that's enough to be getting on with for now. We've all got our own opinions about what's going on. and so have the people on the show floor. So let's hear from them.
So I'm Cynthia from New York. One of the things that I think is really interesting is we've been talking about a lot of this technology for years. This whole notion of digital, the digital home or living room or whatnot, has been in beta for 10 years, right? What I was seeing today felt like it's finally here. The technology is there, you know, the devices are there, the platforms are there, and now it's just time for the consumer to vote.
So my name is Laurent Vessier, VP Marketing and Sales for Laser Operations, a laser company based in Silmar, Los Angeles, California. Today we spent a lot of time looking at the new technologies around. I think one big message seems to be 3D is happening. On our side, we're really interested in mobile technology, projector technologies, which can be plugged into iPod or plugged into your camera or plugged into your laptop. And so that's also a pretty exciting development.
My name's Donna. I'm from North Carolina. And you know, the question is, what have I seen that I really like? And I think there are a couple things. I watched Microsoft and Steve Ballmer. I like the idea that what you get on your PC, which could be almost anything today, is going to become transferable and portable to go with you anywhere you go. What I didn't think was, what I don't think is so great, I think 3D TV is a lot more hype than it is spectacular. I can't imagine spending 2 hours with those goggles on watching a movie. I'm sorry. It's going to have to, I'll probably wait for the next generation. This is my first CES, so my feet are killing me today. It's been really a lot of fun.
One of the other gadgets making its debut at this year's CES is from PlasticLogic, which is a company founded in Cambridge, and it hopes it can head this new charge in e-books that we're hearing so much about. Their new product, the Q, is a lightweight touchscreen electronic reader that comes with a fairly hefty price tag, at least $650, but should be coming to the rest of the world, not just America, in the near future. We got PlasticLogic's Stephen Glass to give us a demonstration.
It's very close to A4, but 8.5x11 in the US is what people think of as paper.
I mean, it's very sleek looking, incredibly thin. It feels like a kind of sheet of glass, basically, that I'm waving around in my hand.
If this were a sheet of glass, it would weigh a lot more. And it's because of the innovation that started at Cambridge University over 10 years ago that we can build something this large, this elegant, that weighs only about a pound, just a little more than a pound. In addition, because it's based on plastic, it's shatterproof, not nearly as fragile as any of the glass-based readers. So we're able to go much larger and keep the weight down. From the very beginning, we've been designing this product with a business user in mind. And the business user does a lot more than just read a book or a newspaper now and then. We have research that shows that the typical office worker prints over 10,000 pages in a year. With the Q Pro reader, he doesn't need to do that anymore.
Just give me the stats on it, you know, like, what's the memory? What's the memory built in? How much does it cost? That's quite an important thing.
Very, very good questions. There's the 4 gigabyte configuration that comes with Wi-Fi and the 8 gigabyte configuration that comes with Wi-Fi and AT&T's 3G connection. The 4 gigabyte one is $649 and the 8 gigabyte is $799.
Are we going to see this? I mean, it's given that it's 3G, therefore it's GSM compatible. You know, we could theoretically use this in Europe. Are we going to see it soon?
So the technologies can work worldwide. We're starting in the United States, and we're not ready to announce anything else. Although if you buy one in the United States and you travel, the Wi-Fi connectivity will work wherever you find a Wi-Fi hotspot attached to the internet. So that won't be an issue. The 3G connectivity is limited to the US only.
There's a built-in 3G connection, and that's free. Once I've bought the device, the cost of that is either included in the cost of downloading the documents, or I don't have to pay a monthly subscription
Monthly subscription.
It kind of looks a little like a picture frame. There's a sort of an inch or so of black border around it, and then an e-paper
screen in the middle, but it's also a touch screen, so you've just been drawing on the screen effectively. You know, you just clicked on the pencil tool and you've been scribbling in the margins effectively. You said there's a lot of work that goes into the core technology. I just wondered, can you talk through for the people listening, how does that core technology work? What does Plastic Logic do that other providers of this stuff don't?
Mm-hmm. Everybody that makes these e-ink based e-readers has the same top e-ink layer. And e-ink's a fascinating technology, and I'll show you something a little bit of how that works. But underneath that, that's where everybody else has these glass-based backplanes. And where ours is different is it's plastic. Now, our product isn't flexible. The display itself is, for a number of reasons. The biggest is the rest of the electronics aren't plastic-based. They're standard electronics. You start bending them, they break. The other is... For this kind of user interface, you actually need some rigidity. It's got to hold in your hand well and not flop around so that you can use the touchscreen. This is really what's different. What's underneath this plastic backplane is a collection of transistors for each pixel. So e-ink works by having these little microcapsules with little white and black spots, and they have different electrical charges. So the plastic transistor array changes the charge here, and the little microcapsules migrate, changing what you see. So here where it's white on the screen, the white balls are on top. Where it's black, the black balls are on top, and the grays have combinations in between.
A lot of people I've talked to about who, you know, users of this stuff, there are two things they ask for. One is a refresh rate that's faster. The other thing is color.
Right.
Everyone's desperate for color. So can it get colorful?
That's the holy grail of the reader. Everybody's looking at it. You can go places, the various shows, they're looking at advanced technologies and see interesting examples. They aren't yet to the level of what we think our customers want yet. And so we're tracking these technologies very closely, and we expect to be there when it's right for the customer. So it's there. It's a couple years out, and we're excited to be in the hunt.
I've seen people, I think a couple of years ago, I was talking to someone here who showed me a flexible paper, e-paper screen. And it was kind of interesting to look at. But at the same time, you poked it with your finger and it flops because that's what it's meant to do. But still, a lot of people talk about flexible screens and, you know, how maybe, you know, a lot of people think that they'd be useful. Do you think that that's a problem that people have to overcome in their minds, you know, about how they actually want to use these devices, or is that a technical problem which we can fix at a later date?
We believe that we can fix it over time. It's in our minds. Exactly how that's going to come out, I can't predict that just yet, but I know that in the next year we're going to learn a lot about how people want to use these, the technology will advance, and then we'll start incorporating both of those into the next generation of product.
You know, we're clearly seeing consumers start to be interested in this in a way that they haven't been before. Does that make your business proposition easier or harder, or are you just different and you can kind of have a symbiotic relationship with that?
I think right now the fact that there is a lot of interest in these other e-readers that are more leisure focused, people who want to read, it's helping prove the need for the business focus, the people who need to read. So I think we're just at the very beginning, and those other e-reader products, they're very nice products in their own right. They aren't what we are, but they help prove the whole kind of broader category and make people more interested.
That was Stephen Glass from Plastic Logic there. I had a look. I was fairly impressed. I thought it was a nice device, very expensive, but aimed at, as they were saying, aimed at the business market, which usually means people with more money than,
yes,
than sense. So obviously, Plastic Logic's one of these companies that's betting that e-books are going to be big. You know, pretty much everybody else is as well. Personally, I'm not entirely convinced by these arguments, but how do you two feel about it?
I do have an e-book reader. I got it for Christmas last year. And I've read Cory Doctorow's novels on it, because he obviously gives those away for free as electronic downloads. But I think the big problem is the content. It's not the actual device. The device itself is really nice for reading on. But it's just trying to... Because I don't really want... I don't mind paying for a book, but I don't want it locked to that device. So if the device breaks, or I don't want to be end up carrying around £1,000 worth of books.
I like giving books away and lending them to people and stuff. So you can't do that.
Yes.
But Matt, how about you?
Well, to me, it feels a little bit like an in-between technology. I think if you get any piece of hardware that does only one thing, it's got a relatively short shelf life as a sort of hero product. I'm thinking of things like sat-navs, which, of course, there's people still buy them in their droves, but I don't think any of us sees a huge long-term future for the standalone sat-nav. Having said all that, I guess there are two key tests that I would run, and one of those is, do you see civilians on the street using these things? Well, absolutely. You know, when I get my train to work, plenty of people will be using e-book readers. And then the other thing is the Egan parent test. And my mother got an e-book reader for Christmas this year. She knows how to work it. She likes it. She loves reading it. It's kind of her thing. And she absolutely loves the Sony e-book reader that we got her. So, you know, maybe it's not aimed at us.
I think this is one of the interesting things. So I've been writing a lot about this for The Guardian recently, because I'm kind of obsessed with how many Kindles Amazon is selling and the fact that they don't tell anyone. Yeah. And like what the impact of that could be, because actually I think it could be dangerous that they're inflating expectations. But yeah, I think actually one of the interesting things is when I asked our readers and listeners, you know, how do you see people using ebook readers? Because I don't generally. A lot of them said, yeah, I do, you know, on the train to work, and you know, older people especially seem to love them. Which is completely the commuters and the middle-aged are not the usual early adopter pattern. So we're kind of caught off guard by that, I think.
But I wonder if, we started off talking about slate PCs and new form factors for laptops. And I wonder if, you know, when the screens are right and when it is comfortable to read a book on a laptop, you know, will people still need to buy an e-book reader?
But I think there is something about the e-paper displays does make them... And also the battery life. That, for me, is why... Yeah. I mean, I can put MP3s on my ebook reader if I wanted to, but that would then run down the battery, whereas the battery lasts for like 4 weeks at a time if I just use it just for its main purpose.
Obviously, we're going to hear a lot more, I think, about ebooks over the coming years and probably the coming CESs as well, so we'll come back to that one. Now, given the vast expanses of show floor here, each day we're sending our own Scott Cawley out to see what's going on. Imagine a Geordie version of Annika Rice running up and down the aisles. He doesn't like me saying that. But anyway, today he ventured into the North Hall to see what was going on.
There's a different flavour to this side of CES. In this hall, there's areas devoted to gaming and green technology, and an eye lounge, which is basically a large area for tat that you can stick on your iPod and iPhone. There's also a few less facelifts around. However, I spent the morning looking at in-vehicle technology and gadgets for healthy living. There's plenty of car audio manufacturers here. As you can probably hear behind me, and as I can feel in my stomach right now, this corner of the event's got plenty of huge bass bins installed and pimped up cars that are here on display. But there's names like Pioneer and Kenwood demoing the next versions of their in-car DVD and MP3 systems as well. One new theme, though, that seems to be developing is the connected car. Ford were demonstrating an American model which uses a PIN code to get into the car instead of a key. And once inside, there's the usual features like hands-free calling and turn-by-turn directions that are popular in sat-navs. But there's also a feature that reads incoming texts to you as you drive, and the car can even automatically call emergency services with a message if the airbag's deployed. Now, Kia demonstrated haptic feedback on their stand. That's feedback by vibrations through the steering wheel, developed to make it easier to control the hi-fi without having to take your eyes off the road. However, Jay from the Korean company showed me car widgets, which present information on the screen of your entertainment system.
This is a widget-based car navigation system. These are main menus, and you can customize your menus.
So you can add elements from news, weather, sport, information, that kind of thing.
Right.
Almost like you can add apps to smartphones and things. You can add information into your screen on your dashboard?
You are correct. Right, this is a smart key. You can ignite your car. You can start your car.
Right, so you can start your car from the screen on the dashboard.
Right. So, let's see. This is like a social networking site. If you click, let's click the Facebook here. You can see the real-time message from your friends.
So we have the main menu, and there's basically a line for status updates from your Facebook friends. And if you click on it or press on it, you can see all of your friends listed there. And there's apps for Twitter, MySpace, and LinkedIn too. So, and does that function while you drive?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Suppose that your friend sends a message. If you click it, it will show where he sent the message. So this navigation will tell you how to get there.
And as you do that, a map's popped up on the screen, and this is the in-car GPS, is it the system, yeah?
Right, right.
It obviously has to connect to the internet to get all this information while you're driving. How does it do that? Does it need something like your phone to have to connect via Bluetooth and use it that way? Or how does it actually connect?
You need a modem.
So is this in cars now?
No, but we are trying to launch it soon, this year.
Okay. And is that to launch in Korea or in Europe, America?
I think USA first.
A few aisles over there were gadgets which monitor your health, and a cute-looking robot from BeatBots, which contains microphones, sensors and webcams to react and communicate with the user. And it's designed to help children with autism. But after a few restless nights with jet lag, I was interested in a gadget from Zio, which promises to coach you to get a better night's sleep. Ben Rubin from the company told me more.
The Zio Personal Sleep Coach, for the first time, actually allows you to measure your sleep in your own home. You use a lightweight headband that measures your brain waves, and it shows you on an alarm clock in the morning how much light sleep, how much REM sleep, and how much deep sleep you got. It also gives you a single score, your ZQ, which represents your sleep quality for that last night. In addition to the product that you wear on your head and sits on your bedside, there's an online program that shows you in great detail all of your sleep and allows you to connect your lifestyle, so how much caffeine, how much anxiety, all back to your sleep, and then actually coaches you to improve your sleep.
Yeah, so that was what I was going to ask next, actually. If you find out you're having bad sleep, what can this device do about it, or what steps will you have to take next when you find out the information from Zio?
So people are amazingly sleep-deprived these days, and for the most part, it's not because they have real medical problems. They just have bad habits. So what Zio does, by putting on your bedside exactly how you slept last night, it combines that with a coaching program that shows you, first, anxiety. How can we deal with some of the anxiety in your life? Relaxation techniques, taking a warm bath. Next, it moves on to your sleep schedule. Having a consistent sleep schedule is very important for getting optimum sleep quality. And it goes through additional steps about consumption of alcohol, consumption of caffeine, who's sleeping in the bed next to you. So it takes all these into account, gives you a personalized program, and helps you improve your sleep.
Okay, and then once you have achieved your optimum sleep pattern, is that it? Do you need to carry on with the system once you've kind of trained? Is it like training once you've trained yourself into a good night's sleep? Is that it?
We compare it to weight loss. You know, most people never really get done with maintaining and having an optimal weight. It's the same with sleep. If we're sleeping 6 hours and all of a sudden you're sleeping 8 hours, you've made great strides, but, you know, then all of a sudden there's a big paper due, or, you know, you've got a deadline at work that you just have to meet and you slip back down the hill again. So, you know, people pick up Zio again and they say, okay, I'm going to get back into it. Hopefully every time it's quicker and easier to maintain that optimal sleep.
Might the fact that you have to wear a headband to sleep put you off sleeping?
For most people, it's actually very comfortable. It takes them, you know, one day to a few days to get used to, and then no problem. I sleep with it every night. My ZQ is about a 75. Last night I got a 52 because I had to wake up early and get on a plane and come out.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, an optimal night for me, I actually got a 130 is my highest ever, which is like after a big hike and boom.
You're out.
Wonderful sleep.
Now, tomorrow I'm going to be looking around the central hall at CES, which features home theatre and video tech, as well as high-performance audio. So have a look at cesweb.org, and if there's any exhibitors over the rest of the week that you have a burning question for, then post it on our Facebook page or tweet us, and I'll try and get it answered. The links are all at guardian.co.uk/techweekly.
All right, that's almost all we've got time for today, so there's just time for me to remind you that we're also producing scads of stories and videos from the show. So today we're taking a look at the claims of many companies here about their environmental credentials and this whole green technology revolution that they keep banging on about. So you can also see me zipping around on a new electric bike, which was kind of fun. Log on to guardian.co.uk/technology for the latest, and tune in tomorrow for the next exciting instalment of the Tech Weekly podcast. For now, there's just time to whisper sweet compliments to our guests. Stephen Glass, Fixation Video's Will Head, and Matt Egan from PC Advisor, and to our roving reporter, Scott Corley. My name's Bobby Johnson, and thanks for listening.